feels like one continuous gesture. June 25th. Stems and roots. The love we show saves the love we hide, the way a sprig in sun feeds its unseen root. Though I believe in living in the open, parts of me hide. I can't help it. But what I can help is which parts of me, the open or the hidden, run my life. What I can rely on is this inexplicable knowing that when I am in the open, life nourishes even those parts so sorely hidden. Just as green stems in spring stay connected to their darker roots, just as the roots grow when the stems do, my compassion soothes my fear where I can't see. Unknown to me, my love feeds the underside of my confusion. The light I take in keeps the roots of my soul alive. We become so preoccupied with what we are not able to address, what we are not able to mend, what we are not able to leave behind, that we forget that whatever we are in the light of day is slowly but surely healing the rest of us. For your meditation, bring to mind one thing you feel incapable of solving in your personality. Surround it with your breath. Accept that it will be with you for a while. Now put it down and feel the part of you that happens without any work. Inhale strongly with this part of your being and know that its native strength is softening what you can't solve. June 26th. The Gift of Prayer. Prayer is not asking. It is a longing of the soul. It is daily admission of one's weakness, and so it's better in prayer to have a heart without words than words without a heart. Gandhi. This great spiritual teacher reminds us that prayer of the deepest kind is more a pledge of gratitude for what has already been received than a request or plea for something not yet experienced. Such an effort refreshes the soul. Implicit in Gandhi's instruction is the need to surrender to our lives here on earth. By admitting our weaknesses, we lay down all the masks we show the world, and as we do so, what is holy floods in. I once saw a blind man rocking endlessly in the sun, an unstoppable smile on his face. Not a word was uttered. To me, he was a priest, a shaman, and his whole being was praying and shouting in silence that the day beyond his blindness was happily enough. This is what the heart knows beyond all words, if we can find a way to listen. That beyond our small sense of things, a magnificent light surrounds us, more than anyone could ask for. This is what prayer as gratitude can open us to. For your meditation, center yourself, and as you breathe, close your eyes and cease all asking. Simply breathe with gratitude for the air. Relax and feel your frailties and imperfections, and let the simple air fill them. Breathe deeply and slowly, and from your tender, imperfect insides, ask for nothing and give nothing. Just feel without words for your soul's place in the fabric of things. June 27th. The Monkey and the River. It's said a great Zen teacher asked an initiate to sit by a stream till he heard all the water had to teach. After days of bending his mind around the scene, a small monkey happened by, and in one seeming bound of joy splashed about in the stream. The initiate wept and returned to his teacher, who scolded him lovingly. Ah, the monkey heard. You just listened. With the best of intentions, we often build false careers of studying the river without ever getting wet. In this way, we can ponder great philosophy without ever telling the truth, or analyze our pain without ever feeling it, or study holy places without ever making where we live sacred. In this way, we can build a cathedral on the water's edge, spending all our time keeping it clean. Or we can count our money or say our prayers without ever spending anything or ever feeling God's presence. In this way, we can play music or make love skillfully without ever feeling the music or our passion. The apprentice was brought to tears because the monkey, slapping and yapping its way in the river, had landed in a moment of joy, and the apprentice knew that all his reverence and devotion and meditation hadn't brought him the joy of a monkey. The river, of course, is the ongoing moment of our living. It's the current that calls us to inhabit our lives, and no matter how close we come, no matter how much we get from staying close with a sensitive heart, nothing will open us to joy but entering the stream. I once was on a screened-in porch on a lake I used to visit every summer for 20 years. My friend and I were watching it rain, as we had done countless times over the years. Suddenly, like that simple and beautiful monkey, my friend bounded up, slapped the screen door open, tracked his clothes, and jumped into the rain-filled lake. I watched like the apprentice, feeling the pain of always being dry, and then I shed my clothes and jumped in too. There we were, in the center of the lake, water from above in our mouths, in our eyes, pelting us, water entering water, lives entering their living. Each pelt of rain on us and in the lake, uttering joy, joy, joy. For your meditation, as you move through your day, notice your interactions with others and with the life around you. Notice if you are watching what is happening or if you're a part of it. If you're watching, place your heart in the stream of what's before you, the way you might dip your hand in running water. Do this by opening your heart with your out-breath and letting life in with your in-breath. Watch and be. Open and let in. Listen and get wet. June 28th. All That We Are Not. Discernment is a process of letting go of what we are not. Father Thomas Keating. I can so easily over-identify with my emotions and roles, becoming what I feel. I am angry. I'm divorced. I'm depressed. I'm a failure. I'm nothing but my confusion and my sadness. No matter how we feel in any one moment, we're not just our feelings, our roles, our traumas, our prescription of values, or our obligations or ambitions. It's so easy to define ourselves by the moment of struggle we're wrestling with. It's a very human way to be consumed by what moves through us. In contrast, I often think of how Michelangelo sculpted, how he saw the sculpture waiting, already complete, in the uncut stone. He would often say that his job was to carve away the excess, freeing the thing of beauty just waiting to be released. It helps me to think of spiritual discernment in this way. Facing ourselves, uncovering the meaning in our hard experiences, the entire work of consciousness speaks to a process by which we sculpt away the excess, all that we are not. Finding and releasing the one gesture of soul that is already waiting, complete within us. Self-actualization is this process applied to our life on earth. The many ways we suffer, both inwardly and outwardly, are the chisels of God freeing the thing of beauty that we have carried within since birth. For your meditation, sit quietly, and as you breathe, feel all that troubles you rise through your body. As you breathe, allow all these troubles to move away from you. Breathe deeply and accept the stillness that comes. It's the skin of your soul waiting in its completeness for you to carve away the excess of your very human moods. June 29th. A Little Fish Story. The instant fish accept that they will never have arms, they grow their magnificent fins. I confess I was surprised to wake one day with this knowing about fish. It seems a koan or riddle to decipher. After living with it a while, I've come to feel that it holds another key to faith. That before we can be what we're meant to be, we must accept what we are not. This form of discernment asks us to let go of those grand fantasies that take us out of our nature, that make us work to be famous instead of loving, or perfect instead of compassionate. Yet the instant we can accept what is not in our nature, rather than being distracted by all we think we could or should be, then all our inner resources are free to transform us into the particular self we are aching to be. This act of acceptance is a risk that frees us because we can't find the growth that awaits us until we give up what is against our very nature. It's this surrender, without knowing what will happen next, that allows our lives to truly unfold. For your meditation, sit quietly and allow your true nature to rise within you. Without trying to name it or understand it, simply close your eyes and breathe it into your hands. Breathe evenly and allow your true nature to find gestures in your hands. During your day, play with these gestures. June 30th. Looking Away. In exchange for the promise of security, many people put a barrier between themselves and the adventures in consciousness that could put a whole new light on their personal lives. June Singer. The pull into the truth of things is very strong. Often the only way to resist it is to deny what we are seeing, to pretend our lives don't have to grow or change. Yet when we do this, our spirit, which doesn't know how to pretend, keeps moving. For as the Isa Upanishad says, the spirit is swifter than the mind. We are then painfully, like a dog at the end of its leash, staked and running at the same time, pretending we don't know any better. Interestingly, we tend to think of ignorance as an innocent not knowing. But the Buddhist teacher Chögyam Trungpa points out that to ignore someone or something is a willful looking away, a grave act of denying what is already conscious. Trungpa suggests that the willful act of looking away is a crime against the essence of things that costs us dearly. When we find our spirit on the move when we are pretending otherwise, the tension can be ripping. It leaves us all with the need to learn how to discern between an innocent not knowing and a willful looking away. This is an inner knowing that can determine whether we will live like a dog at the end of our leash or whether we will run free through the grasses of life. For your meditation, sit quietly and center yourself. As you breathe slowly, try on the in-breath to sense your spirit. Feel where it is living in you. On the out-breath, try to feel your place in the world, where you go through the days. As you breathe, keep sensing your spirit and feeling your place. Simply notice any difference, and throughout your day, look there. Your simple and honest looking will lessen the gap.
July 1st. The heart's blossom. Courage is the heart's blossom. All courage is threshold crossing. Often there's a choice to enter the burning building or not, to speak the truth or not, to stand before oneself without illusion or not. But there's another sort of courage we're talking about here, the kind when afterward the courageous are puzzled to be singled out as brave. They often say, I had no choice. I had to run in that building for that child, or I had to quit my job or I would have died. Despite all consequence, there's an inevitable honoring of what is true, and at this deep level of inner voice, it's not a summoning of will, but a following of true knowing. My own life is a trail of such following. Time and again I have heard deep callings that felt inevitable and which I could have ignored, but only at great risk of something essential perishing. It was this honoring of what is true that guided me through my cancer. Saying no to brain surgery and yes to rib surgery. Saying yes to chemo and no to chemo. Each decision appeared both courageous and illogical to my doctors. Since then, I've been called heroic for surviving, which is like championing an eagle for finding its nest, and I've been condemned as selfish for seeking the truth, which is like blaming a turtle for finding the deep. Courage of this sort is the result of being authentic. It is available to all, and its reward, far more than respect, is the opening of joy. For your meditation, meditate on a decision that you are struggling with. Rather than focusing on your fear of what might or might not happen, try opening to what feels true. Without strategizing or imagining the consequences of honoring what feels true, simply let the truth as you know it rise within you. As you move through your day, let what is true fill you, even if you don't quite understand it. July 2nd. Wrong view. The mind composed of ignorance or wrong view suffers from spiritual disease. It sees falsely. Seeing falsely causes it to think falsely, speak falsely, and act falsely. You will see immediately that everyone, without exception, has the spiritual disease. Ajahn Buddhadasa. In Pali, the ancient source language of Buddhism and Hinduism, the word for mental illness means wrong view. We must be careful not to interpret this righteously, as in, if you see things differently than I, you are wrong. The wisdom here lies in the revelation that our wellness of mind hinges on how clear and true we remain to the pulse of life itself. At heart, our mental health comes out of the sacred relationship between our deepest self and the very source of life. The moment we distort, limit, or rationalize things away from what they truly are, we start to experience the spiritual disease that Ajahn Buddhadasa speaks of. This Buddhist teacher from Thailand reminds us that these passages of imbalance and blurry thinking are unavoidable. They can't be circumvented the way you might drive around a pothole. No, these distortions can only be minimized and repaired. So we must accept that by being human, we will distort the gift of life, and thus we must commit to learning how to refresh our relationship with what is sacred. Quite often, to uphold a wrong view, we build and maintain a wrong way. For example, when younger and sorely in need of approval and love, I hurt so much inside that I assumed that life was somewhere over there, not where I was. Once believing this, I put all my energy into getting over there. But after a hard journey, I was blocked. The people over there wouldn't let me in. Now I had to figure out who was the gatekeeper and what were his rules, and now there was the doing of all these tasks to satisfy the gatekeeper so I might be let in. It took me years to realize that no matter the pain, life is always where we are. Nothing is being withheld. All that misguided effort was built on a wrong view. As Buddhadasa says, everyone without exception has the spiritual disease, while underneath, the undistorted life is softly waiting. Given this, we each must make a ritual not of seeing rightly, but completely. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind someone's approval you seek. If you can, meditate on why this feels so important to you. What is it you need that you think their approval will provide? Rather than devise ways to get this approval, try to understand where the need in you comes from. July 3rd. Eyeing and Mying. The shore thirsts, but does not own the ocean that keeps it soft. So too the heart and all it loves. In the ancient Indian language Pali, the word ahamkara means eyeing, having or making the feeling of I. The word mamamkara means mying, having or making the feeling of mine. In Buddhism, the feelings of eyeing and mying are considered so dangerous and poisonous that they are seen as yet another cause of spiritual disease. This tells us that as soon as we start to separate what can't be separated, our mental health will suffer. This tells us that the dearest things in life can't be owned but only shared. In truth, we share this mystery called life the way sea creatures share the ocean. While each fish has its nest and small patch of bottom to gum, none can live without the deep that flows through them all. We are no different. Yes, we can own a watch or a car, but no one can own the love or peace or energy of life that must flow through our hearts if we are to survive. As soon as we devote ourselves to eyeing and mying, we are drawn into a life of distraction from what really matters. Once we commit to making things mine, we unleash a career of gathering and storing. Now there's the need to wall in and maintain. Now there's an endless sorting through the things of the world that could be mine. Now the attaining. Now the ensuring. Now there is possessiveness and jealousy and envy and the need to protect and the right to bear arms. Now there's the secret want to get what others have and the right to sue. This eyeing and mying can sicken the strongest soul. It often contaminates how we love. How many times have we all asked our lovers for the reassurance, "Are you mine?" Even as I speak this to you now, I struggle like you not to have things, but to make good use of them. Not to guard and parcel out my care, but to let the love through. I am, that is for sure. But what is truly mine, beyond this vibrant sense of being alive that I just keep opening to? For your meditation, center yourself and hold before your mind's eye one thing that you feel ownership around. It might be a course you teach or a garden you tend or a child you have raised. Breathe deeply and consider the energy you expend guarding and protecting this special thing rather than enjoying it. Breathe steadily and try to loosen your hold on this special thing and see if it stays close to you anyway. July 4th. Here and there. Here is always beneath there. I remember sitting for a long time on the edge of a summer lake, watching the far shore. I could see early light flood the water in the distance, and this somehow made the other side seem exotic. Every morning I'd sit on my small edge of lake and watch the other side, imagining that a certain mystery awaited me. With each day, its call grew larger. Finally, on the seventh day, I had to go there, and up earlier than usual, I rowed across the lake, beached my small boat, and sat in the exact spot I had been watching. As I looked about, the aura of otherness I had seen from my daily perch was gone. I was somewhat undone, for though this far shore was beautiful and peaceful, the wet clump of shore I ran my hand through was the same as where I'd begun. I started to laugh at myself, for looking back at where I'd been sitting every day, I saw the early light flood the water in the distance, and now where I'd been living seemed exotic. Now a certain mystery called me back to where I was. So often we imagine that there is more full of gold than here. It's the same with love and dreams and the very work of our lives. We see the light everywhere but where we are, and chase after what we think we lack, only to find humbly it was with us all along. For your meditation, sit quietly with someone you trust and admire. Express to each other one point of light you see on the other's shore. Meditate on the quality the other sees in you and try to see it in yourself. Bow to the mystery of where you are. July 5th. Beneath False Hope. We need to stay current with each other. Angelus Arian. It's taken a lifetime to understand how easily I can secretly wish for things to change, and in my secrecy, prevent true change from happening. For example, I loved a friend for many years who was unable to listen or be kind or patient, and rather than feeling just how much that hurt, I always hung in there, secretly believing that he would change and grow and one day emerge before my eyes as the friend I always believed he could be. Well, that didn't happen. I'm not saying that change is not possible, but more deeply, that true change, the kind that's self-initiated and lasting, has more chance of happening in a relationship that doesn't hide its shortcomings. As long as I could dream of my friend as I wanted him to be, it softened the true pain of how we were actually living. Without such truth, neither of us could grow, not he for having to face the effect of his self-centeredness, and not me for having to risk saying what I needed. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate on the actual truth of a significant relationship. Breathe deeply and try to relax the hope of your loved one transformed. Breathe steadily and feel the full humanity of your loved one, thorns and all. Accept what arises. Honor what you need. July 6th. To witness and hold. Just as the warmth of summer can make a cricket sing, the quality of being held enlivens the heart. We have been battered by modern times into obsessive problem solvers. But as life pares us down into only what is essential, it becomes clear that the deepest sufferings of heart and spirit can't be solved, only witnessed and held. I have struggled with this constantly. Just the other day, after being away for 2 weeks, I returned to a tender partner, who lovingly uttered, "I really missed you." Instantly, I reacted by scanning for ways to solve the feeling, to limit my travel or call more often. I instantly tried to change my patterns of being away from the relationship, rather than just feel the poignancy of being loved enough to be missed. Frequently, this reflex to solve, to rescue, to fix, removes us from the tenderness at hand. For often, intimacy arises not from any attempt to take the pain away, but from a living through together. Not from a working out, but from a being with. Trust and closeness deepen from holding and being held, both emotionally and physically. I'm learning, pain by pain and tension by tension, that after all my strategies fail, the strength of love waits in receiving, not negotiating, in accepting each other and not problem-solving each other, in listening and affirming each other, not trying to change or fix those we love. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind the situation of a friend or loved one that you would like to change. Breathe deeply and accept that you cannot live their life for them. Instead, exhale slowly and be with your heart's knowledge of what it means to love this person. Exhale cleanly and release your want to fix their pain. Inhale cleanly and simply hold them, pain and all. Hold them in your center. July 7th. Patience. I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These are your greatest treasures. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Lao Tzu. Patience is the second of Lao Tzu's central teachings, and it's a hard bit of wisdom to accept, for the place of waiting is always trying and very difficult to live out. Yet, quite honestly, it is waiting that saved my life. Clearly the most demanding and rewarding practice I have encountered. Had I not withstood the confusion and indecision and ambiguity and the pain and alarm of imagining the worst during the endless diagnostic gauntlet, I would never have made it to the right course of treatment that carried me through my experience of cancer. Had I not waited, which is different than avoiding what needs to be done, I would not be able to say these very words to you. For I would have undergone unnecessary procedures that would have severed me from my memory and my ability to speak. Fear wants us to act too soon, but patience, hard as it is, helps us outlast our preconceptions. This is how tired soldiers, all out of ammo, can discover through their inescapable waiting that they actually have no reason to hurt each other. It's the same with tired lovers and with hurtful and tiresome friends. Given enough time, most of our enemies cease to be enemies, because waiting allows us to see ourselves in them. Patience devastates us with the truth that, in essence, when we fear another, we fear ourselves. When we distrust another, we distrust ourselves. And when we hurt another, we hurt ourselves. When we kill another, we kill ourselves. So when hurt or afraid or confused, when feeling urgent to find your place on this earth, hard as it is, wait, and things as you fear them will, more often than not, shrink into the hard, irreplaceable beauty of things as they are, of which you have no choice but to be a part. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind a situation, now resolved, that required you to be more patient than you were prepared to be. If you can, recall how you viewed the situation and the people involved, when it first presented itself, when your patience ran out, and when the situation resolved itself. How did waiting change you? What, if anything, did waiting give you? July 8th. Moments, not words. Like the moon, come out from behind the clouds and shine. Buddha. When I think of those who've taught me how to love, moments come to mind, not words. As far back as grade school, when Laurie wouldn't stop spinning when recess ended. Spinning to a deeper, higher call, she laughed her little head back, her arms wide, trying to hug the world. Then, the day Kennedy was shot, there was my choir teacher, Mr. P., crying for a man he didn't know, letting us go home. But I came back to hear him play a sad piano to what he thought was an empty room. And Grandma holding my little hands open on her basement step, saying, "These are the oldest things you own." Or the changing faces I would wake to at the foot of my bed while recovering from surgery. Or my father-in-law watering black walnuts 6 inches high that wouldn't be fully grown for 150 years. Or my oldest friend who always listens like a lake. Though words can carry love, they often point to it. It is the picking up of something that has dropped, and the giving of space for someone to discover for themselves what it means to be human, and the forgiving of mistakes when they realize that they are. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind 3 people who have taught you how to love. As you breathe, recall the moment that revealed each lesson. Discuss these teachings with a loved one. July 9th. The surface and the deep. When under, remember the surface. When on the surface, remember the deep. When our days are turbulent and troubled, our challenge is to remember that the wave is not the sea. Though it pounds us, the pounding will pass. Though it tosses us about, the tossing will pass if we don't fight it. Often our fear misleads us to stay in, close to shore, when the safest place is in the deep if we can get there. Any swimmer knows, stay too close to shore and you will be battered by the surf and undertow. We must swim out past the breakers if we are to know the hammock of the deep. Stay on land or make it to the deep. It's the in-between that kills. For your meditation, sit quietly and practice entering the deep. Imagine each breath is a stroke. Breathe slowly and stroke your way past all distraction. When you feel the swell of life around you, simply drift. July 10th. The Ring of Safety. Who sees all beings in his own self, and his own self in all beings, loses all fear. From the Isa Upanishad. I was sitting on a bench in the sun, waiting for Robert, when a yellow jacket landed about 4 feet to my left. I watched its striped anterior pulse and protract, the sun making its black rings blacker and its yellow rings almost orange. It made me think of my mother, and how if that yellow jacket were within yards of her, she would have rolled up the nearest magazine and with trepidation tried until she swatted. Her fear of being stung made her kill many a small thing. She couldn't tolerate the uncertainty that something living might hurt her, and in her deep fear of being hurt, she walled herself in, swatting everything away. Almost 50 years later, I realize that we all suffer the uncertainty of being hurt by the life that surrounds us, and we all have a changing ring of safety beyond which we are likely to hurt other living things in the guise of self-defense. I sat on the bench, and the yellow jacket flitted closer. But having almost died from cancer, feeling blessed to be here at all, I let the little insect come much closer than I used to. With a softer, more truthful eye, I could see it had little interest in me. And I'm ashamed to admit just how many times I have harmed others, because, like my mother, I couldn't tolerate the unpredictable nature of their advance. How often we imagine things are dangerous when they are only doing what comes naturally. The yellow jacket came closer still. When it was almost on my arm, there was time enough to gently shoo it on its way. It flirted with me for quite some time, coming close till I would shoo it on, buzzing at a distance, then coming close again. This is so much like the dance we do with strangers and loved ones alike. How often we murder parts of ourselves by not letting things advance or come close. How often we let fear and the SWAT rule our emotional lives. How often we kill or chase away everything that moves. I think of Francis of Assisi, who held so still the birds landed on his branch-like arms, and we wonder why we are so lonely when we won't let anything full of life come near. If we could only see the bee or the bird or our enemy as a brief living center like ourselves, we could let them go on their way without pulling us into opposition. For your meditation, close your eyes and meditate on someone who feels intrusive or annoying to you. Note what you feel, but assess, if you can, exactly what feels intrusive. Is the sense of intrusion coming from your fear, or is the person being truly intrusive? Consider precisely what must be done to keep yourself safe. Adopt only that action, and if you can, engage the intrusion, the fear of it, and the fact of it no further. Note how far your fear would have you keep others away. Note how much closer things can be if you let things do what they do outside your actual boundary of safety. July 11th. The Moon and the Dewdrop. Enlightenment is like the moon reflected in a dewdrop on a blade of grass. The moon does not get wet, nor is the drop of water broken. And the whole moon and entire sky are reflected in even one drop of water. Dogen. The mystery in love, in work, in any moment of oneness, is that like the dewdrop and the moon, we are briefly ourselves and everything at once. Our essential nature is not changed, only enhanced. The lovers and friends that have helped me stay alive and be more fully alive have come into my life like Dogen's moon. All of their love, as big as the sky, fills my heart, and yet I do not become them, but only more myself. Anything or anyone that asks you to be other than yourself is not holy, but is trying only to fill its own need. In truth, the smallest stem of a damaged heart, like a single blade of grass, holds the essence of everything alive. Enlightenment is the kiss of anything, moon, storm, or kindness, that opens us to that essence. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind one moment in which you felt touched by life other than your own. It might have been in nature or in the arms of a loved one. Breathe deeply and consider how that touch has affected you. After a time, ask yourself, where do you keep that touch of life? When do you need it most? July 12th. Making waves. I would do anything for you. Would you be yourself? In the Hans Christian Andersen classic, The Little Mermaid, Ariel gives up her beautiful voice in exchange for legs. This is a seemingly innocent fable that captures our deal with the modern devil. For aren't we taught that mobility is freedom, whether it be moving from state to state, or from marriage to marriage, or from adventure to adventure? Aren't we convinced that upward mobility, moving from job to job, is the definition of success? Of course, there's nothing inherently wrong with change or variety or newness or with improving our condition. The catch is when we are asked to give up our voice in order to move freely, when we are asked to silence what makes us unique in order to be successful, when not making waves means giving up our chance to dive into the deep, then we are bartering our access to God for a better driveway. As a story about relationship, the lesson of Ariel is crucial. On the surface, her desire for legs seems touching and sweetly motivated by love and the want to belong. Yet here, too, is another false bargain that plagues everyone who ever tries it. For no matter how badly we want to love or be loved, we cannot alter our basic nature and survive inside where it counts. For your meditation, sit quietly and consider your own history of love. As you exhale, consider a time when you gave up some aspect of yourself in order to be loved. As you inhale, allow yourself to reconnect with this silenced part of your nature. July 13th. Now you see it, now you don't. God leads me to still waters that restore my spirit. Psalm 23. It doesn't take very long for each of us to accumulate an emotional history. A child burns her hand on a stove and a fear of fire begins. In a tender moment, a hand is slapped and a fear of love begins. Our emotional associations and reflexes run deep. Often the heart breathes beneath all our associations like a soft, sandy bottom waiting underwater. So, to see ourselves clearly, we must try to still our associations till we are as transparent as a calm lake. When still enough and clear enough, others can also see through to our bottom. It makes love possible again. But paradoxically, when someone is moved to reach for us, their fingers stir things up, sending ripples everywhere, and we and they often lose sight of what matters. All this affirms the need to stay with our feelings long enough for the emotional associations, the ripples, to settle. No one can escape this, no matter how young or old you may be, no matter how innocent or experienced you are. If you've been awake and alive and in any kind of relationship that has in any way been real, your waters will stir, your emotions will ripple. It seems the only way we can truly know our own depth is to wait for our associations and reflexes to subside, till we are clear as a lake. Only when what gets stirred up settles can we see ourselves and each other clearly. For your meditation, breathe slowly and allow your agitations of heart to come and go with each breath. Breathe steadily and try to outweigh your reflexes to be angry or anxious or envious or resentful. Breathe evenly, and with each exhalation, try to feel the depth of heart
that waits below.
July 14th. To know someone deeply. To know someone deeply is like hearing the moon through the ocean or having a hawk lay bright leaves at your feet. It seems impossible even while it happens. Discovering who we are is like breaking a trail up the side of a mountain. Yet the deepest friendships begin when we look into the eye of another and discover that they have been there too. It's always astonishing to me to find out that someone else sees what I have seen, and always humbling to learn that what I thought was my path and my mountain is everyone's. We carry whole worlds within us as we brush by each other in the supermarket to read mayonnaise jars. The entire drama of life churns in our blood as we rush underground to catch a train. We are always both so known and so unknown. This is why knowing someone deeply is such a treasure. It opens the sky of all time. It lets the song come out of the sea. It lets the heart like a photograph be developed for being touched by another. And though we may find someone along the way who's been where we are going, or going where we have been, we must never stop breaking our own trail up the mountain. For only by daring to be ourselves can we deeply know others. This is a walking meditation. As you make your way to work or the store, walk steadily and breathe slowly. As you breathe, feel the inwardness that is you. As you walk and breathe, notice others doing the same. As you meet the eyes of others, realize that they are just as deep as you. July 15th. The risk to be touched. Touch bleeds the heart of its pressure. There are many reasons why we want to be touched. The simplest and most profound is that touch heals us. The way a drop of water spreads when touched, the pains of living that we carry spread when we are held and comforted. The buildup of bearing things alone is released for being touched with sincerity and love. Beneath all language, touch is the common gesture, the energy that connects all that lives inside us with all that lives outside us. We can disagree, be Catholic or Muslim or Jewish, be conservative or liberal, corporate or rural, and all the stern walls created by what we think will crumble for the gentle reach of a compassionate hand. Often, we're frightened to let others in, afraid of being hurt, and sometimes, once knowing the salve of being touched, we seek that comfort for pains we can only heal ourselves. I repeatedly have found myself doing both, but these are problems of when and how to open ourselves to touch. The need to be touched is never really in question, any more than we question the need to breathe. When my grandmother was dying at 94, I felt crippled at heart because she had reverted to speaking the Russian of her childhood, and I feared we wouldn't be able to understand each other. But an old friend took me aside and said, "You can both understand touch." With this, I stroked her face and arms in silence, and she rubbed my wrists, and even when she couldn't open her eyes or speak any longer, we had a language of comfort that carried us to the moment of her passing. Sometimes we would do better to admit the heart works best in mime, for beneath the worries and fears of being hurt or rejected, or even taken advantage of, beneath the avalanche of excuses and explanations, there waits a deep and simple pulse that we need from each other in order to be whole. Enter this meditation with a loved one you feel safe with. Focus on a pain that has been difficult to bear alone. Now take turns. Have one of you express as directly and simply as possible not the circumstances of this pain, but the feeling of bearing it, while the other listens in silence. Now, using only your fingertips, have the listener comfort the speaker through the gift of touch. July 16th. The Magic of Peace. As the lungs remember to breathe even when we sleep, the spirit keeps us alive through the dream of our will. It's said that Merlin, when training young Arthur in the woods of Camelot, told him that the only difference between magicians and the rest of us is that magicians accept that our will is but a dream. Certainly we decide what clothes to buy and what car to drive and even how to spend our days, but these are like the stones a hungry fish mouths along the bottom as the river sweeps its small life along. We still devote ourselves to these small things, for that's what we do. And it's true, God is inside every particular. Yet often we survive and even thrive not because of our endless schemes, but in spite of them. But what I need to tell you is that I met Merlin in a dream, and I asked him about being alive. He wanted to know if I knew Arthur, and after a time he whispered, "Go beneath the many languages of desire, for our peace depends on whether we fight or ride the stream." This is a bedtime meditation. As you settle into sleep, breathe steadily, and just as you entrust your need for air to your lungs throughout the night, entrust your need for peace to your spirit and lean into the depth that surrounds you. July 17th. The Impulse to Love. If somebody were to cut me into 1,000 pieces, every piece of me would say that it loves. Chris Luby. The man who said this is a deeply spiritual person who is a native of South Africa. He, like many others, grew up under apartheid. He told me that he was taught by his ancestors not to stay bitter or vengeful, for hate eats up the heart. And with a damaged heart, life is not possible. In a way, we're each confronted with the same dilemma that Chris faces. How to feel the pain of living without denying it and without letting that pain define us. Ultimately, no matter the burden we are given, apartheid, cancer, abuse, depression, addiction, once whittled to the bone, we're faced with a never-ending choice to become the wound or heal. Terrible things are hard enough to experience the first time. Beyond their second and third and fourth experience as trauma, their impact can easily make us become terrible if we do not keep our want to love alive. Perhaps the most difficult challenge of being wounded is not turning our deepest loving nature over to the life and way of the wound. This touching statement by this South African man affirms that the nature of the human spirit is irrepressible. Just as a vine or a shrub, no matter how often it's cut back, will keep growing to the light, the human heart, no matter how often it is cut, can reassert its impulse to love. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind someone you admire who is still loving despite the pain they've experienced. Breathe slowly and open your heart to the wisdom of their being. Breathe deeply now and let your heart breath wash over your own pain the way that surf softens footprints in the sand. July 18th. A Firefly of Love. Who knows that in the depth of the ravine in the mountain of my hidden heart, a firefly of my love is aflame. Abutsu Ni. This quiet Japanese woman's confession to herself almost 1,000 years ago
tells us that the most important things begin so far inside we can hardly hear them ourselves at first, or that we keep the most important things so tucked away that they barely have a chance to grow. Probably her sigh of heart bears witness to both. Please, listen to her lines again. Who knows that in the depth of the ravine, in the mountain of my hidden heart, a firefly of my love is aflame. These are not just words, but the heart cloud of a living being, catching herself alive in a moment that has repeated itself in everyone who has ever known or wanted to know love. And though I'm not sure how, we can, in the snap of a guarded moment, in the wince of an unexpected hurt, be a mountain away from what we feel. But if we own the separation, we then begin the arduous pilgrimage back to oneness. Somewhere along the way, and often with good reason, we learn to fear putting our feelings out in the open, out in the weather of ordinary air, as if our small piece of love will die for exposure to the elements, as if our true feelings will not survive the gaze of others. Yet we all know so very well that without air nothing can grow. So what are we to do with our tiny little firefly? It's a beautiful irony that in confessing her hiddenness, Abutsu-ni has given us away. For isn't it her firefly that has fluttered all the way up from the ravine, up from the mountain of her hidden heart, flitting to moisten her eye and wag her reluctant tongue? Isn't it her little firefly of love that has kept its tail lit for more than 900 years? It doesn't have to be pretty or smart, just honest and true. For many a dance starts with a trip, and many a song finds its opening through a cough. For your meditation, breathe deeply into your own heart. Once there, breathe slowly and repeat Abutsu-ni's words aloud as if they are your own. Breathe deeply and feel the small firefly of your love flitting inside the mountain of your heart. Breathe slowly, and with each breath, let the firefly flit up your ravine, up your mountain, and up your throat.
July 19th. The Wisdom in Blinking. Asleep too long, we need to wake. Awake too long, we need to sleep.
We blink 1,000 times a day. 1,000 times a day the world goes dark. 1,000 times a day we wake. We can't escape this opening and closing. It's a reflex we can't control. Even as I say this, your eyes, along with your heart and mine, keep blinking, opening and closing repeatedly no matter what you do. It's part of being human. Yet so much depends on which you see as home, being open or closed. Do you see life as one stream of light interspersed with nights of dark, or as one stream of darkness interspersed with days of light? Though there will never be an answer, what we believe about the nature of life matters. It lifts or burdens our days. So ask yourself more than once, is life one long miracle of feeling interspersed with moments of breaking? Do we repeatedly fall in our humanness from a never-ending light? Or is life one long painful breaking interspersed with moments of wonder? Do we struggle up from the unending dark briefly into glimpses of light? Obviously, there are times we feel one way and times we are certain it is the other. There are even times we know it is both, but how we allow for both, how much we make the light our home and how much we settle into the dark, determines the personal alchemy of our hope and despair, our optimism and pessimism, our belief and doubt.